Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're continuing with our discussion of Prahlad Maharaj meeting the Python Man, 7th Canto Bhagavatam, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So today we'll do text 20, 21, 22. Sri Narada Vacha,
Sri Narada Vacha,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Tadvat Amrita Yantritaha, Sri Narada Vacha,
Sri Narada Vacha,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Tadvagamrita Yantrita, Sri Narada Vacha,
Sri Narada Vacha,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Sa Itam Daicha Patina,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Paripristo Mahamuni,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Smahyamanas Tamabhyaha,
Tagvagamrita Yantrita, Sri Narada Vacha,
Sri Narada Vacha,
the great Saint Narada Muni said,
great Saint Narada Muni said,
Sa, that saintly person, lying down, itam, in this way, Daicha Patina, by the king of the Daichas, Prahlad Maharaj, Hariprishta, being sufficiently questioned. Mahamuni,
Mahamuni,
the great saintly person,
person.
Smahyamana,
Smahyamana,
smiling,
smiling.
Tam, unto him, Prahlad Maharaj. Avyaha, prepared to give answers. Tatvak,
of his words.
Amrita Yantrita, being captivated by the nectar. Translation. Narada Muni continued, when the saintly person was thus questioned by Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the Daichas, he was captivated by this shower of nectarian words, and he replied to the inquisitiveness of Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face. We'll cover a few verses today. Some have purports. One or two don't. Notice the nature of the exchange between Prahlad Maharaj and the Python Man. Prahlad Maharaj very carefully questions him about a subject matter that could appear to be sensitive. Why are you so fat? Even though there's no doubt you're a great saintly person, yet you're lying here doing nothing and fat. How can that be? Seems to be a contradiction. He carefully questions the Python Man for the benefit of all living entities. That's the nature of a saintly person. The saintly person seeks to clarify crucial issues for everyone's benefit. That is the nature of bhakti. When you hear and talk about Krishna, you're doing the greatest welfare activity for everyone. You are showing the greatest love. Everyone claims to love love, but no one understands what is love. By stirring the nectarian ocean of Krishna's pastimes, qualities, form, by discussing these things, not only the person who asks questions benefits, but also the person who answers the questions about Krishna. And all those who are in the audience, they also benefit. In fact, the Shastra describes that the benefit is so great that even when everyone who was participating in the discussion leaves the place, those who walk through that place afterwards also get purification. This is the extraordinary potency and effect of hearing about Krishna. Therefore, those who are truly benefactors of society, they're always trying to stir the ocean of conclusive truth, Siddhanta Saga. They're always trying to clarify essential issues so that human beings can properly utilize their rare form of life instead of wasting it. In other words, by the questions of Prahlad Maharaj, he's focusing your vision. You see, unless you know how to focus, you won't notice what is important for you. You can see that easily in children. They don't know how to select what is the most important thing in a scene. There can be so many very valuable objects in a room, but if there's some candy there, the child will go for the candy and ignore so many other precious things that may be there in the room. Children don't know how to focus. That's why their parents watch them and try to guide them. But in all phases of life, not simply in childhood, unless human beings are taught to focus, they can't pick out the forest from the trees. They get lost. And that's what's happening, especially today. We'll speak more about how people are actively cultivating the culture of nescience, of darkness. A devotee is someone who's actively cultivating the culture of enlightenment. You have to go one way or the other. We need to look at our activities and see what am I developing? What kind of culture am I establishing for myself? In Krishna consciousness, we actively seek to establish a culture of enlightenment, not nescience or darkness. You get two different results according to which path you follow, the culture of illusion or the culture of enlightenment. You get, there are two different results, so you choose which one you want. Now, the nature of the loving exchange between the Paita Man and Prahlad Maharaj is such that Narada Muni says that the Python Man, that saintly person, was captivated by Prahlad Maharaj's shower of nectarian words. This is how we aspire to relate to devotees. We want to captivate devotees with a shower of nectarian words. You can do that when you start to appreciate devotees in all their uniqueness, in all their diversity. Once you cease to see devotees as impediments or inconveniences and look at them as the rare jewels that they are, then you're able to properly relate to them through the service of the Lord. And Krishna inspires you with the ability how to shower upon devotees nectarian words. Amidst that shower of nectarian words, the saintly Python Man replies to the inquisitiveness of Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face. So what is he going to say now? Sri Brahmana Uvacha. This Python Man, saintly person, great Brahmana, he's speaking. O best of the Asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes, with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejection of things as they are. Purport. A pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can understand the minds of others because of his pure vision in devotional service. A devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can study another man's character without difficulty. Now let's look at these words spoken by the saintly Brahmana, the Python Man. First of all, he says to Prahlad Maharaj, Asura Shrestha, O best of the Asuras, best of the demons. Why? Because Prahlad Maharaj took birth in the dynasty of demons. His father, as you know, was Hiranyakashipu, the greatest demon. Yet, into that dynasty was born Prahlad Maharaj, the greatest devotee, as you heard before. Bhagavat Priya, most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This shows you that bhakti can come from the most adverse material circumstances. Today you have the most adverse material circumstances in which from a very young age, and it's getting younger and younger, human beings are totally corrupted with intoxication, illicit sex. What to speak of meat eating. People say do not have a chance to properly form their, to form a proper identity, a healthy psychology, because from the very early stage of life, from their early teens, they obliterate themselves, destroy themselves with sinful activity. Yet, from such wreckage, still bhakti can come if the person contacts a devotee of Lord Krishna. Sometimes that contact comes because the person is so weary and so frustrated. Or sometimes that contact can come because the person yearns for true knowledge. In any case, however it happens, if even persons through such wrecked, horrible circumstances as we have today can develop bhakti, devotional service to the Lord, then their life becomes all auspicious, even amidst such degradation that we have today. Prahlad Maharaj was born in a demoniac family. Haridas Thakur, the Acharya of the Holy Name, was born in a Mohammedan family. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, although born in a high Brahmana family, still, by their association, they, in a way that they describe themselves, that by their association they became almost Mohammedans. In other words, they became too close to the meat-eating culture. Yet and still, in contact with Lord Chaitanya, they made extraordinary contributions to bhakti. O best of the Asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, that is important, Arya Samata, whose activities are approved by civilized men. Why should you concern yourself whether your activities are approved by persons who have no understanding of what is life, what is the purpose of life, who have no understanding of the proper standard of behavior? We're not concerned. If you walk into a zoo and take a tour and the animals start making sounds at you, do you take it very seriously? Oh, what are they saying about me? What are the baboons thinking about me? What are the chimpanzees? What do they see in me? You're not concerned because you know that these are just animals. They have no understanding of higher standard of life. Similarly, devotees are a bit callous toward the judgments of non-devotees because we understand they have not the capacity to see what is true value. They don't know what is the precious thing in life. Therefore, how can they evaluate a devotee? Of course, just because we do not take seriously the perceptions of non-devotees in terms of their attempts to evaluate devotees, that doesn't mean we ignore in a flamboyant way any proper niceties for the sake of existing peacefully in this world, in this society, for the sake, particularly for the sake of preaching. We don't thumb our noses at the non-devotees. A devotee is a perfect gentleman, perfect lady. Srila Prabhupada said once that that's how you can judge who is his disciple. They are perfect gentlemen, perfect lady. We're sensitive to other people's inconvenience, but we don't compromise Krishna's service. That is the point. That is the difference between being sentimental and being wise in Krishna consciousness. We are sensitive to everyone because we know everyone is part of Krishna. We want to act in such a way that people think nicely of Krishna consciousness, so they'll take it up, to some degree at least. But we don't compromise Krishna's service. We don't compromise Krishna's standard. Now, here, the saintly Python man is saying, Prahlad Maharaj, you are Arya Samata. Your activities are approved by civilized men. That should be the standard we long for. Everyone likes to be appreciated by others. Everyone likes to be considered worthy by others. But who are these others that you want to be appreciated by? Look at that. Don't just blindly go around wanting to feel appreciated, wanting to feel revered. Look at the quality of the persons. And then you can decide. This is very important. Because Prahlad Maharaj's activities are approved by civilized men. the saintly person was saying. I take you very seriously. You have inherent transcendental eyes. Ajatma Chakshusha. Transcendental eyes see through Shastra. Shastra Chakshu. They don't see based on imperfect sense perception. That is why we immerse ourselves in hearing Bhagavatam, so that we'll see properly. Seeing begins with the ears. You take in the proper information, the transcendental sound vibration, and then you can see in the correct way. He says, because of your inherent transcendental eyes with which you can see a man's character, and thus know clearly the results of exception, of acceptance and rejection of things as they are. We should not be afraid to conform to a standard. That fear is another product of the nescience or darkness today. Throw out all standards, throw out all reference to past authorities. Just speculate with your imperfect senses and just act according to how you feel. There's nothing new agey about this. This is the same old darkness of ignorance. But you see here how a proper human being thinks. Prahlad, you're recognized by advanced and civilized men. These are your qualifications. That is what we're looking for. And that is what we should present to others. We are proud that we follow the standard of Bhagavatam, that we follow the standard of proper behavior. We don't feel ashamed because of that. We don't feel shame because we study and honor the lives and teachings of the greatest personalities. Therefore, we're not so concerned with the trivial, degraded persons of today. We're not concerned with taking what they say seriously, although we are very much concerned with their own welfare, more than they are concerned. Please think about this. The standard, Arya Samatha, whose activities are approved by civilized men. Everything in Bhagavatam is like that, authorized. Nothing whimsical. Nothing invented. Just like at the end of the first canto, you know how Prichit Maharaj had his questions we were speaking of. What is the duty of someone in all circumstances? And what is the duty of someone about to die? And we discussed how these two questions are actually one question. Because in all circumstances, death can come at any moment. Everyone's about to die. How did Shukadeva Goswami first respond to that question? Once he took the seat and began to expound as everyone listened. Bhariyan eshate prashna krito loka hitam nirpa atmavit samata pumsam shotavyadishuya para. Bhariyan eshate prashna. Your prashna, your question is glorious. Why is it glorious? You see, in proper culture, there's always reasons why something is glorious. You just don't go around saying, oh, fabulous, oh, wonderful, brilliant, excellent. What's the reason? You have to give authorized reasons. Bhariyan eshate prashna kato loka hitam nirpa. Number one, your question is glorious because it is beneficial to all kinds of people. Loka hitam. it helps everyone in the world. That is the nature of bhakti, Sanatan Dharma. By the questions and answers between devotees, the whole world is benefited. But what more? Atmavit samatap pumsam. Shukadeva Goswami tells Pritchard Maharaj, your question is approved by all transcendentalists. Just like here we see Arya Samata, whose activities are approved by civilized men. Shukadeva Goswami tells Pritchard Maharaj, your questions are approved by transcendentalists, Atmavit, those who know the difference between the body and the self. We don't take seriously the opinions of those who cannot understand the difference between matter and spirit. It doesn't mean we go out of our way to mock them. We certainly don't do that. But we don't take their input very seriously. That is the point. Love is very practical. Love is not some kind of gushy, sentimental, squishy thing. Love requires discrimination and tact. Just because you love doesn't mean you just listen to everyone regardless of what their standard is. No. Love means you should know what is best. If you love someone, that means you're taking upon yourself the responsibility to give them the best thing. Love is very expensive. It's not a cheap thing. Of course, in today's situation, love has become very cheap. Family life is breaking apart, becoming lost. No one expects to have a permanent relationship. Love is something that they think may be there, it may not be there. Just be partners and see what happens. Real love means to give the best. In order to give the best, you have to know what the best is. Therefore, Atmavit Samatah Pumsam. Someone who knows what is spirit, what is matter, can begin to give the best, but that's only the beginning. To actually give the best, you have to know that Krishna is the best. We don't say that fanatically or arbitrarily. We know what is Krishna. Shad Aishvarya Purna. Krishna is unlimitedly full of all opulences. Therefore, he's the best person. What is wrong in us, in our recognizing that there is the best person, Purushottam? Everyone is attracted to superlative people, so we're attracted to the best person. What is wrong with that? And we want to give the best to others. Therefore, you should feel very confident and secure that through your practice of bhakti yoga, you are knowing the best and you're becoming able to give the best. Therefore, the devotee is the only true lover. We're happy to see how our activities, how our questions, how our goals compare to the standard. We're happy to see that all the aspects of our life are approved by transcendentalists. In this way, our path back to Godhead can become very easy. It's a different kind of life, conforming to standards. people today think, oh, that's slavery. Who cares what the ancients thought? Who cares what these Bhagavatam personalities thought? Then was then and now is now. But there's nothing different going on in this world. The same old Maya has always been there. It'll always be there. Why don't we take shelter of the lifeline extended by Krishna through Guru Parampara? That's also always going on. There are two things that are always there, darkness and light. The culture of nescience or darkness and the culture of enlightenment. So you take your pick. We want that lifeline, that standardized, authorized lifeline coming down through disciplined succession. In this way, we can judge our questions, we can judge our behavior. For example, what is stated in Isha Upanishad? Iti shushruma dhiranam yenas tat vichachakshire. Thus I have heard, thus it's been explained to me by the saintly authorities. Those who are dhira, sober, who are not agitated by material circumstances. Only those kind of persons can help, can love. Iti shushruma dhiranam. Look at the quality of the persons who have influence in your life. Then you can judge how your life is going to proceed. If you take advice from fools, then your life will be very foolish. There's so much pressure today to do that. To listen to the advice, the guidance, the counsel, the standards of others without understanding their qualification. Are they dhira or are they adhira? Adhira means they can't control their mind and senses. They have no solid footing in real knowledge. They're blown away every time the modes of passion and ignorance strike. What is the point in listening to such persons when it comes to serious things? We want to hear from those who are self-controlled. Then our life can be benefited. Iti shushruma dhiranam. Thus I have heard from sober, self-controlled persons. They have said that one result comes from the culture of nescience, darkness. Another result comes from the culture of enlightenment. Our life should be the active process for developing high personal standards. That is the culture of enlightenment. We should constantly have our eye on becoming ideal persons in the service of the Lord. This is completely opposite to the culture of nescience or darkness, in which we just let our imperfect, limited, and uncontrolled senses dictate everything in our life. And think we're going to be happy. Now, after describing Prahlad Maharaj's qualification, in terms of human civilization, the Python Man is going to bring out Prahlad Maharaj's connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasya Narayano Devo. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Bhagavan, full of all opulences, is Hritgata Sada. Always predominant in the core of your heart. because you are a pure devotee. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, always drives away all the darkness of ignorance, as the sun drives away the darkness of the universe. This is an essential point in Krishna consciousness. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andhakar. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. Wherever there's Krishna, there can't be any Maya. Just like wherever there is sun, there can't be darkness. Our lifestyle is one of always trying to make brighter in our life the Krishna sun. Purport. The words bhakti kevalaya indicate that simply by executing devotional service, one can be full of all knowledge. Krishna is the master of all knowledge. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasasya shriya. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayesha arjuna tishtati. And when the Lord is pleased with a devotee, the Lord instructs him. Only to the devotees, however, does the Lord give instructions by which to advance further and further in devotional service. To others, the non-devotees, the Lord gives instructions according to their manner of surrender. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that bhakya kevalaya means jnana karmajnana mishraya, unmixed with fruitive activities or speculative knowledge. Simply surrendering at the lotus feet is the cause of all a devotee's enlightenment and awareness. In other words, we are developing the greatest scholars through bhakti yoga. There are two different types of knowledge that you have to understand. There's what's called shupagyan, ordinary knowledge of how to live in this world and satisfy your material necessities. Yes, that's needed to some extent, but it's unimportant or not as important when compared to divyagyan, the divine knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Truth of Lord Sri Krishna. By the process of bhakti yoga, you're developing spiritual intelligence and spiritual knowledge. Even just by washing the floor, washing pots, any menial service, it's developing in you knowledge and realization of Krishna. That's the secret of devotional service. That's why you can say that simply by executing devotional service, one can become full of all knowledge. You'll know Krishna. That is the goal of knowledge. You'll be able to see what so many others cannot see, that Krishna is the cause of all causes. A devotee is not interested in serving Krishna for any reasons of material gain or for any reasons of merging into oneness. A devotee is not even interested in serving Krishna for liberation. This is why Lord Chaitanya says, Ramya Kachcha Upasana Rajavadu Varganya Kalpita. There's no better way of loving Krishna than that shown by the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. These gopis, they did not even care to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They did not become attracted by the opulences of the Lord. They were simply attracted to Krishna as a person. So many people, if at all they worship God, they expect something, material benefit. They expect to get freedom from material existence. They may want mystic powers. But the gopis simply loved Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. It is not that they were thinking, we want Krishna to return for our pleasure. No, they were thinking, we want Krishna to return to Vrindavan because only in that way will he be satisfied. He needs us for his pleasure to be complete. Therefore, they're simply thinking of Krishna, how to serve him for his pleasure. This is how we're being trained in devotional service. It's a very exalted goal, but gradually we can make progress in that direction. How simply to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. How to be an instrument in Krishna's hands. Just like any good tool takes some maintenance, some oil, lubrication. Similarly, as instruments for Krishna, we have to maintain ourselves, maintain our good health, so that we'll be in a good situation for Krishna to use us. But beyond that, our only concern is, what is Krishna's pleasure? Where is Krishna's pleasure? These topmost devotees, these most confidential devotees, the gopis in Vrindavan, they had no way of even sensing pleasure except through Krishna. Everything to them is simply, how is Krishna feeling? How can Krishna get more pleasure? They had no way of sensing their own happiness. This is the perfection of bhakti yoga. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya approves. There are no better examples of bhakti than these devotees. When Krishna returns from the forest in the evening, are the gopis waiting to see him to satisfy themselves? You see, during the day, while Krishna is gone in the forest, it is agony and anxiety in a spiritual way for the cowherd ladies of Vrindavan. Because they're thinking, Krishna has such soft lotus feet. He's walking barefoot in the forest. Surely the pebbles are pricking his feet. We can't bear to think in that way. We can't bear to imagine how the Lord's feeling discomfort. Then when Krishna returns in the evening with Balaram and the cowherd boys, it's not a question of the gopis seeing Krishna for their pleasure. Oh, you've returned to give us something. Now we can get happiness from you. They're actually just thinking, you've returned, and now we can serve you. Not, what have you brought us? When I was a little boy, I had some nieces, not cousins, and little cousins. And even though I was only 9 or 10 years old, I noticed that when my aunt would come back from work, these cousins of mine, they'd immediately race to the door. And what is the first thing they would say? Mommy, mommy, what did you buy me? This happened to you also? Yeah. What did you buy me? And I thought this was very gross as a young boy. But I saw that my aunt liked it. She felt wanted and appreciated. I didn't buy you anything, but I'll get you something tomorrow. And she felt wanted. Krishna's not like that, and the topmost devotees aren't like that. The topmost devotees simply want to satisfy Krishna. They don't want anything from Krishna. And Krishna, being the expert master, doesn't indulge his devotees in such a way that their possibilities for pure love will become reduced. Prahlad Maharaj says this to Nrisingadeva, I am eternally your servant. You're eternally the master. We have no relationship other than this. Please don't try to tempt me with material benedictions. You are the true master because you don't indulge your servants just to be popular. And the true servant never approaches the master for his own. Pleasure. Otherwise, if he does that, it's business. I'll do this for you if you do that for me. This is why so many relationships become dry, because it's a business proposition. I'll satisfy your senses, you satisfy my senses. I'll keep you company, you keep me company. It's all a deal. And you know how quickly those deals break apart. But in devotional service, we're simply pledging ourselves for Krishna's pleasure. And gradually we develop the security and confidence that Krishna knows best for us, better than we ourselves. I'm sure you've read in the Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna is more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we ourselves are eager to go back. Now this is a little surprising, because we may think, I know what's good for me and no one wants my own improvement better than me. That's not true. In the age of Kali, people are very weak even about their own self-interest. Manda sumanda matayo. Besides being completely disturbed, completely deranged, they don't even have the energy to push on their true self-interest. They don't even know what their true self-interest is. They don't know how to be selfish. Through bhakti yoga, gradually we indeed begin to trust Krishna. That Krishna knows what's best for us better than we do. Through that selfless devotional service, we revive our attraction to Krishna. And that attraction is beyond even understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Krishna has opulences, that Krishna can give liberation. Ultimately, through the path of pure bhakti, we simply become attracted to Krishna simply because Krishna is unlimitedly attractive. That's all. That's all that goes on in the remote village of Vrindavan. Just pure love for Krishna based on pure attraction. The gopis didn't want anything from Krishna except a chance to serve him for his pleasure. That's all. They're not thinking when Krishna returns from the forest with the cows, coward boys playing his flute. Dust is covering his hair and his face. That dust has been raised up by the hooves of the cows and calves. When he returns, the gopis are not thinking, what are you going to do for us? We've been waiting all day while you've been in the forest. Now you satisfy us. No, they're thinking, now at last we can satisfy Krishna. With that kind of motivation in your heart, then Krishna will drive away all the darkness. Then your spiritual life becomes easy. What does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita? Tesham avanukampartam aham agyanajam tamaha nashayami atmabhavasto gyanadipena bhashvata. The Lord says, out of compassion for devotees who are seriously engaged in devotional service, I, from within their heart, will dispel all the darkness of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. That's how your spiritual life becomes easier, by Krishna appearing in your heart. He's already there, but he makes himself known to you, and he personally drives away the darkness of ignorance in your heart. Now, the Python Man continues. My dear king, although you know everything, you have posed some questions, which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Purport. A saintly person doesn't wish to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, a common man does not need to be advised. Unless one is prepared to take instructions, it is said that a saintly person should not address him, although sometimes, because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. As for Prahlad Maharaj, however, since he was not a common ordinary man, whatever questions he posed would have to be answered, even by a great and exalted personality. Therefore, the saintly Brahmana did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, were not concocted by him. This is indicated by the words, Yatha Shrutam, meaning, as I have heard from authorities. In the Parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the Shastras and give answers according to Vedic understanding. The words, Yatha Shrutam, refer to Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as Shruti because this knowledge is received from authorities. The statements of the Vedas are known as Shruti Pramana. Once you quote evidence from the Shruti, the Vedas or Vedic literature, and then one's statements will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from mental concoction. Our work is trying to get people to consult the authorities, to take authoritative knowledge, to realize that you can go on speculating life after life, but you'll never understand what is God, who is Krishna, by speculation, by your imperfect senses. At some point, and we hope it's quick, you just have to settle down and take information that's beyond the range of your senses. Apply it in your life, and then you'll see the result. With your tiny imperfect senses, you cannot establish what is Dharma, what is religion. Nor can you understand the goal of religion, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with your imperfect tiny senses. Your only choice, your only hope, is to get authoritative knowledge, to give you that information that's beyond the range of your senses. And then by applying that knowledge, you'll experience it. Try to see what's going on today. People just want to experience with their imperfect limited senses. They don't want to hear. They can't accept that someone may know far more than them. They don't feel any need to let their senses take a back seat. In bhakti yoga, we want to hear from Krishna about Krishna. Otherwise, how else are we going to understand? Our senses are so tiny and limited. How can we establish what is Dharma? Well, I feel like doing this. I think this is right. This I feel good about. It's a good decision. As soon as you think like that, you've got problems in your life. But instead, look at the example set by Prahlad Maharaj and the Python Man. I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. Same as in Isha Upanishad, iti shushruma dhiranam yenas tad vichachakshare. I've It's been explained to me by the dhiras, those who are self-control. And then remember Shukadev's glorification of Prichit Maharaj's question. Bhadiyana shate prashna krito lokahitam nirpa atmavit samatam samata pumsa. Your question is approved by all authorities. These are some points that we can meditate on. Let us not become fascinated by the whimsicalness and arrogance of the culture of nescience that's all around today, in which no one can admit that there's so much beyond the range of their senses. Therefore, their only hope for true knowledge is to rely upon authority. That reliance upon authority is not blind. If the authority says you do like this, and then you'll get the result. If you do like that, and you get the result, what is the problem? You don't know, but if you follow someone who knows, then see, you'll get the result. It's simple as that. It's not blind faith. But in the beginning, you have to recognize, on my own, without instruction, I won't know how to see. I won't even know what I'm looking at. How many of you have studied biology in university? Anyone? No one. Did you know that you may have the most powerful microscope and look through it, but unless you're trained to recognize what you're seeing, your observation will make no sense? You're seeing, but you don't know what you're seeing. You have to be trained to recognize what's right in front of your eyes when you look through a powerful microscope. You are relying on authority for so many things. When there's a computer problem, then you call Bhakti Jeff. He's the authority. You can't see what's going on. He can see. Everything in life is like that. So why should we become weakened and compromised by all this propaganda that, oh, you're enslaving yourself, you're conforming to past traditions, you're locked in by the verdicts of these saintly persons of the past? You can't produce any persons anywhere near the standard of the Bhagavatam personalities. So why should you blame us for wanting to listen to the best, wanting to take the opinions of the best, the dearest, those who are sober and self-controlled? Why should we be so eager to consult our own mind and make that the supreme? Oh, mind, tell me what to do. We're not so foolish. Therefore, we relish conforming to the standards. We relish taking the authorized line. We're happy to do that. We're not ashamed. We're not embarrassed. All right. Any questions? Yes.
What's a human love and what's a divine love?
You tell me. What do you think humans call love?
We love our parents, we love our children, we love our wife. Or
someone who's in connection with your body, right? That's important for there to be true love in the material world. someone who's in connection with your body, the parent of your body, the child that comes from your body, the spouse who's in connection with your body. It's all body-based, the so-called love. Why you pick out this body and say, I love you? There's so many bodies around. Why you focus on one? Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. The bodies come from the earth, and when they're dead, they go back to the earth. But you pick out one particular lump of matter, one particular lump of earth. Oh, I love. Very impractical. Very small-minded. Just like here at the Gaur Yoga Center. Often ladies come, men, not only ladies, men, who, you know, they have some partner, and the partner's uninterested in Krishna consciousness. And so the person who's coming is saying, oh, you know, I don't want to hurt this person. I think there's real love between us. It's just that person's not interested in Krishna consciousness and I am. What to do? And we give them a simple formula. You want to see if there's real love? Cut off the benefit. See what happens. Cut out the action. Then you'll see the true color. Works every time. Every time without fail. Yeah, cut to the chase. Oh, yeah, get the fog out of the sky. As soon as the young lady or young man cuts off the benefit, then, you know, immediately the other partner shows his or her real colors. Wait a minute now, what's going on here? I thought this was love. And they try to give you some kind of concocted notions, but love involves everything, the body, the emotions, everything. Why are the Hare Krishnas, you know, distorting these things? So-called human love is in relation to the body. The emotions are also a body, a subtle body. It's so small-minded when you think of it. You pick out a few people out of all the billions of people in this world and you get some feeling for those few persons because they're in relation with your body. Either they're born in the same immediate family as you or you're having lusty affairs with that person. So it's all body, the so-called love. Sometimes people want to expand their loving propensity a little bit. They start loving their country. That's hard to do, you know. To love a country, to love a nation. It's just a sentiment you feel, but how do you actually practically love a nation? Well, such persons will be patriots, sacrifice their life. I've told you about how in the USA there was one hero from what the Americans call the Revolutionary War when they were breaking away from England. So there was one person who was spying on the British for the sake of the rebellious colonists, and he was captured by the British and they were about to hang him, and they asked him, what are your last words before we hang you? And he said, every American school kid has to learn this. I only regret that I have just one life to give for my country. And hung. So the people are taught to revere that. Yes, this is a or just recently, last year or so, Ronald Reagan president of the USA for 8 years. He died. And some years ago, before he met his death, he was speaking because he knew he was getting Alzheimer's disease and he wouldn't be able to remember. He said, "I'm fading into the sunset of my life, but America will dawn forever." Love of the country. When I was at university, the university had a slogan. The university slogan is, "Truth is light." But then they also had a more mass slogan for mass purposes. You know, the students would have in their rooms big banners, these big cloth, opulent banners. You know, it said, "For God, for country, for Yale." So they tried to get some feeling out of the heart. Call it love. Love of a person, love of the country, love of the university. Even now, you know, they still send every 2 months, 5 months, and they send a stick color magazine from the university to me for all the graduates, you know. Think back to Godhead magazine. They send letters, you know, looking for donations, you know. "What are you going to do for Mother Yale?" That's what they said. "She has raised you. She has nurtured you. She has nourished you. Now what are you going to do in return? Now, no doubt you're making a lot of money because you're a Yale graduate. You must be president of something or somehow. So, now give donations. Give back to Mother, who took care of you so nicely when you were young." These are all sentiments. There's nothing wrong with wanting to love. Sometimes people hear us talk like this and they think, "You guys are against love." No, we want the best love. We want to give real love. But that requires purification and knowledge. If you want to love, you have to be prepared to pay the price. Become purified. Become knowledgeable. We love according to the standards set by the greatest authorities. Iti susuma dhiranam. We don't love like cats and dogs. We don't love like fools. We love in the best way, that way indicated by the greatest authorities, approved by all transcendentalists, atmavit samatapun. Not the ways approved by those in passion and ignorance. Anything else?
One man, extraordinarily active, and he was quite pleased on that way. And for us, it's been kind of wow, for myself, there's the idea of becoming connected.
The idea of becoming what?
Connected.
I hope so. The only way you can be inactive is by sacrificing the results of your activities for Krishna. Then there is inaction in action, as we discussed yesterday. That's Bhagavad Gita. But no, we don't want to be inactive. We want to be active for Krishna, doing things for Krishna. But action for Krishna's pleasure involves constant deliberation and reflection. How much am I doing this for Krishna's pleasure and how much am I doing this for my own pleasure? That aspect always has to be there. That's part of the attempt to love. You're always considering, reflecting. Am I really doing this to satisfy the other person or is it for me? Am I imposing my own desires on this other person? That's part of the effort to develop real love. Not that we're just active in Krishna consciousness in a helter-skelter way. Active, do things. There's a contemplative side to our activeness. Therefore, we say that all devotional service is founded upon hearing and chanting about Krishna. Without that hearing and chanting about Krishna, we'll forget who we're serving and why. So easily, because the darkness of ignorance around us is so great, it's easy to forget. Anything else? Yes.
We're talking about how Krishna is not the best for us, and so what's the problem personally?
What are you praying for?
What
are you praying for? Lord Chaitanya teaches you Shikshashtaka. All you want is a chance to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. That's all. My dear Lord, let me just be a particle of dust at your lotus feet. Mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatar bhakti hoitaki tve. I don't mind taking birth after birth as long as I have devotional service. You just want to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. That is how we're being trained in bhakti. Then your heart will be satisfied. The attractive thing about the Gaur Yoga Center is that devotees are sacrificing to give Krishna to others. That's what makes the attractiveness in the atmosphere. This is nothing we do for ourselves, you know. Hope you understand that. We're doing this for others, so others can hear about Krishna. This whole operation is simply to be able to deliver Krishna to others. This way, that way. And then when someone comes forward, take up their service to Krishna, we're very happy. So here you're learning how to sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure. It's a sacrifice being here. It's materially inconvenient. Often. No doubt about it. Why are you doing it though? You're doing it because you want to help others. You want to give them the best. Of course, it's also spiritually very convenient to be around devotees focused on Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's glories. But materially, it can be inconvenient. If you understand that you're making a sacrifice to help others, then you can more easily handle the situation. Just like going out on Sankirtan, it's a sacrifice. It's nothing you'd ordinarily do. It's nothing you'd ever dreamed you would ever do. Go up to people on the street with books. Excuse me. I have no time. Saw you before. Of course, often you meet very nice people. But it's nothing you ever thought you were going to do in your life. It's done simply out of sacrifice, yajna. and you feel satisfied because Krishna is pleased. Everyone knows when you go out on Sankirtan, somehow you get out the door. There's a lot of resistance first getting out the door, isn't there? It's like your mind telling you no, and so many impediments. When you finally go out and you come back, you feel like you just came out of a spiritual shower. You feel so clean, so fresh. Even you only distributed one book, you still feel so clean. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, Bhava Mahadava Nirapanam. The first effect of Sankirtan, the distribution of Krishna's glories, is that your consciousness becomes cleansed. Sarvatma Snapanam. You're giving the soul a bath, so to speak. Sankirtan means the congregational glorification of Krishna. When devotees come together and have kirtan, bhajan, that's bathing. Purifying, refreshing you, connecting you directly to Krishna. When you seek to give Krishna to someone else, that's sankirtan. You're seeking to involve them in the glorification of Krishna. These are the desires of a devotee. Otherwise, selfishness is very boring. Haven't you experienced that? Isn't it very boring? What's there for me? When will I get what I want? Look at this situation. Is it for me? Look at this person. Is he for me? It's very boring, very dry. You feel so limited, so cramped, so narrow with these petty, selfish desires. But in Krishna consciousness, you feel so broad because you're actually taking up the process by which you can love everyone and everything. That's why you feel so broad and expansive in your heart. It's very miserable to have a cramped heart, you know? Happiness comes from having a broad, expanding heart. That happens through devotional service. So let us have more of a feeling of sacrifice here, that we're doing this for others, even though it's inconvenient for ourselves. A little bit of austerity in order to give others Krishna, just like you've gotten Krishna. If you forget that, then you'll get a little grouchy sometimes here. Anything else? Yes?
You mentioned saying earlier that talking about the childhood background of human standards, teenagers, and state. And I just wanted to ask, coming from a society where you were kind of brought up to think that you were making a big time for yourself, how do you change that mentality and let go of relying on what you can do physically or what you can understand and see, and just understand that Krishna is actually, he will look after you in the long run, even now? How do you let go of that, just rely on that?
You can never be the maintainer. In material life, you're just getting, according to your past material activities, you're getting the result. That result is administered to you by time. So if you think you're the one who's doing, that's illusion. You're just experiencing the reactions to your past actions. Meanwhile, you're creating new reactions for yourself in the future by performing actions now. So it's the system that's maintaining you. In the material world, the system of maintenance is indirect. In other words, for those not performing devotional service, they get indirect maintenance by Krishna. Still, Krishna's maintaining everyone, not simply the devotees, but for the non-devotees, the maintenance is indirect. For devotees, it's direct. Even when apparently devotees are in some suffering situation, they'll always tell you that there's something special about this. Krishna's nurturing me. Krishna's maintaining me. Krishna never shortchanges you. That's something we have to learn. But what did you do for yourself before? In what way? For what? What were you endeavoring for? You told me I wanted to buy a car, I wanted to get a flat. That would have made your life successful. At the present moment, you don't have a car, you don't have a flat. Are you depressed? Huh? What an empty life you are aspiring for. You actually didn't want a car or a flat. You wanted happiness. And you thought that was the way to be happy. Just to live, you don't require so much. Now you're understanding. You can live very simply, right? Most people don't know that, though. You really don't require that much to live. To solve the eating, sleeping needs, not very difficult. And in the course of pursuing that dream, I'm going to get some money, get a car, get a flat, you perform so many sinful activities. See what New Zealanders do when they're 12 and 13 in South Africa. They get into it, when they're 17 or 18 and go to those technicons, huh? Yeah, that's their version of the polytech. They, unlike New Zealand, the polytechs in South Africa, you go live there. And so it's the first time, they're 17 or 18, they live away from home. They just go wild the first year. Wild. Just go nuts. What's done here since the age of 13, they wait till they're 17 or 18 and they just go completely bonkers. Overdose. So that was part of your aspirations. It's not that you just innocently strive for material goals. You understand that? I wanted a flat. I wanted a car. That's not all that's going on. When you have material ambitions, you're implicated in material existence, and in the process of pursuing these dreams, you commit so many sinful activities. Which, of course, everyone regrets. So don't think it to be so innocent. I just wanted a car. I just wanted a flat. I wanted money, a secure future. What else comes along with it? So many sinful activities. Somehow or other, Krishna takes care of all devotees. As long as they want to live simply. Then ultimately you should understand there's no security in material existence. Material life is a problem. Don't have a rosy vision of it. You think material nature owes you a nice time. Forget it. Life is suffering because of birth, death, disease, and old age. That is the fact. It's like when I was speaking at the University of Cape Town, there was one, a girl, 20 years old, from Botswana, a neighboring country to South Africa. And she took an interest in Krishna consciousness. So I told her, you know, I just was reading about your country. The life expectancy, the average life expectancy is 35. I said, you're 20 years old now. You should consider that normally you just have 15 more years to live. What are you going to do? Yes, the average expectancy for life for a man is 35. I think a woman is 36. So you all say, it's horrible, horrible. It's not like New Zealand. Horrible. But think about it. Whether you waste 35 years or you waste 70 years, what's the difference? It's a waste. You're thinking, oh, but our average life expectancy is 70 or 75. How advanced. You just have more years to waste. That's all. And it goes so quickly. That's why the Shastra says, why you make such a big deal discriminating between the 35-year lifespan and 75-year lifespan. It all goes like that. It's like the difference between an hour movie and a 2-hour movie. That's all. So I told her, according to statistics, you have 15 more years to live. Is it because of age that life expectancy is so short? Yes. That's the average life expectancy in the whole country. 35 years. So then I said to her, so what are you going to do for the next 15 years? Yes.
And you know, you said earlier on that we have to look at the quality of those that influence our lives, and that we want to hear from those that are self-controlled. But because we're constantly hearing sound vibration from different devotees that have a different manner or level of surrender, how do we choose who should be able to listen to that? How do we judge?
Everything is pretty clear here. You have your seniors here. What is the difficulty? What's the difficulty? We have our senior counselors here. What's the problem? If you don't take their advice seriously, then there's a problem. Trying to train others who can give advice and counsel, and that way things increase. Today's student becomes tomorrow's teacher. So I think you have a few good examples here, at least. Yes? At least. That was a difficulty. Of course, water will seek its own level. Ultimately, you'll get what you want. If you want the best, you'll get the best. If you want less, you'll get less. But the opportunity is there for everyone. We're just trying to provide that opportunity for everyone to get the best. I do understand it. Not everyone's going to want the best all the time. Sometimes devotees go through their phases, you know. They go off the track a bit, then they regret. Sometimes they don't regret. They don't ever get back on the track in this lifetime. We know these things go on. Still, for those who want to have the best, always the opportunity is there. So I think here at least we have a few examples of serious devotees, yes? Wouldn't you say so? Is it really that complicated? Well, that's why you have a spiritual master. But also let me say that it's not that we should look down upon karma yoga. As I pointed out before, most persons should look up to karma yoga. Karma yoga means you want to sacrifice the results for Krishna, but you're attached to acting in a certain way. We don't look down upon that. But at least we should be aware of what full bhakti is, in which we're not attached to the results or what we do. But karma yoga is nothing to sneer at. There's a subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga, as I always explain, as Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita. We're not going to persecute you if you like acting in a certain way for Krishna. We're not going to root you out, you know. This is not pure. Things take time. Still, you should be aware of the higher standard. You know, we don't expect you to become a gopi overnight. But you should be aware that that is the standard of pure love. Purification is required. It takes time. At least you should be aware of what the goal is. If you like to do art for Krishna, we're not going to persecute you if you do a nice piece of art for Krishna. Oh, you're attached to doing that. We're happy you did something for Krishna and offered it for Krishna's pleasure. If you like to play music and you do it for Krishna, we're not going to harass you. You're attached, Prabhu. You're attached to playing music for Krishna. We're happy that you're offering to Krishna. And we know that under guidance, your desire will become more and more purified. If you like to make nice breakfast to offer to Krishna, we won't attack you. But you should be aware of what the real standard of devotion is. By hearing that true standard, you'll become purified. By hearing that true standard, you won't take all the love propaganda of the material world so easily. You'll understand that true love is the most exalted thing. Yes, Krishna.
Appreciation of the materialist, but with the appreciation of the material, we may not want to do it. And so, I'm just wondering if that's something that we
message will come grateful from Aiden to appreciate it. And also, if we don't feel, if we don't feel appreciated, like the wall up towards that person, you know, feel appreciated.
You should be mindful of those things. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be appreciated, but it shouldn't disturb your service if you're not. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be appreciated by devotees, but your main focus should be on satisfying Krishna's senses, satisfying your spiritual master. And sometimes devotees may appreciate. Sometimes they may not notice. If they do, it's very nice. But still, your service has to go on. It shouldn't be dependent. Your service shouldn't be dependent on appreciation. A mature devotee thinks like that. Now, naturally, for younger devotees, they always need to feel appreciation. It's not that, you know, we should say, Prabhus, there's going to be no appreciation. We don't want you being attached to that. You have to be aware of where everyone's at in terms of their spiritual development. At the same time, we should also be aware of what the ultimate goal is. We want to just serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, but that takes quite some time to develop, quite some effort. You have to be very serious about love. We recognize the basic human psychology of appreciation. We don't try to persecute anyone who wants to be appreciated. All those who want to be appreciated, get out of here. It's a basic human need. That's why people have friends. That's why they have various associations. That's why they have partners, spouses. Yes, you want to be appreciated by your wife, yes? Yeah, of course. But just understand that nothing compares to Krishna's appreciation. When you experience that, then you'll understand. When Krishna smiles upon you for your service, you'll realize nothing compares to that. So why don't you think about the appreciation by the Supreme Person? Then everything else will be in perspective. But just because we want Krishna to appreciate us doesn't mean we are rough with devotees. Who cares what you think? I'm striving for Krishna's appreciation. Because the devotees are more dear to Krishna than himself, his own self. The devotees are more dear. Of course, I always point out that ladies who have the service of managing ladies have a very thankless task often. It's not an easy service. Ladies generally don't like ladies to manage them. They like men to manage them. Because then there's always a chance they might, you know, exact something. But when a lady's managing you, there's just no potential sense gratification there at all anyway. So therefore, the ladies can be very uncooperative toward each other. Because, like, you know, what can you do for me? At least if there's a man managing you, you can always kind of dream. Well, maybe. But with a lady, there's just no hope, right? So therefore, they're real rough with each other. You can't tell me what to do. I don't feel like it today. I'm in the modes. He used the philosophy. The modes of nature have me. Therefore, I can't do this service. I know it's ignorance. You might even quote a Bhagavad Gita verse. So, particularly when ladies... managing ladies, it's a service that often is thankless. But certainly Krishna appreciates it. It's much better that ladies manage ladies than men do it. It's not good for men. Ladies are actually very bewildering for men. Very bewildering. They misunderstand their motives. Because men have such a limited focus. I'm speaking materially. Men have such a limited focus. Anytime a woman is nice to them, a man immediately thinks one thing. Because their vision is so one-pointed. Oh. They just misunderstand all the time. Because nature, material nature, has designed men in that way. They have this drive and this narrow vision. Anything a lady does, you know, just smiles or prabhu at this or prabhu that. Immediately a man, a bell goes off in his head. So they constantly misunderstand each other. Of course, the ladies misunderstand the men, too. Anytime a man just moves his eyebrow, the lady thinks, oh, here will be security. Here will be comfort. He's going to buy me all the things I need. Just moves his eyebrow, and immediately the ladies just start dreaming. Oh, big house, car, three children, money. Farthest things from the man's mind, you know. The other man's just, you know, he's probably thinking, yeah, this one looks kind of nice, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the lady thinks, you know, ooh, house, cars, money, security. What is the man thinking? This could be kind of nice for tonight. That's all. That's it. It's very complicated. So therefore, it is best that the ladies manage themselves. It's better for their integrity, their self-respect, to get a chance to function without just being considered a sense object all the time. It's very healthy for the ladies to have at least some time when they're not being constantly considered a sense object. Then they start to develop integrity and self-respect. But if you're constantly treated like a sense object, you can't respect yourself. And then naturally you'll fall into that trap of, yeah, that's all there is to my life. I'm a sense object. Yeah. And unless someone's pursuing you as a sense object, you feel your life's not complete. So at least for some time, the ladies need a chance to develop some wholesome self-identity, separate from being a sense object. And the men need to spend some time learning how to control their senses. If a man can't control his senses, he can't do any good for anyone. This is the biggest problem with men today. They cannot control themselves. Therefore, they're useless for all practical purposes. And the ladies make the mistake of thinking, I don't mind if he can't control his senses because it'll all be for me. Doesn't work that way. If you've got uncontrolled senses, if a man has uncontrolled senses, he's got uncontrolled senses point blank across the board. That means everyone. That we see. This is what's happening. So therefore, it's a very wonderful service done by ladies who take care of lady devotees. ladies can go back to Godhead. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, I'll take anyone back to Godhead. Laborers, vaishyas, merchants, women, anyone. You have to be very serious, though. Also, men and women need different things. They have different psychology. So when ladies manage ladies, they are actually able to give the ladies what they need. But it is a fact, it's a thankless task. Krishna certainly appreciates. And it's good for responsible ladies to have a chance to be responsible. It's good for their spiritual development. It's like, can you imagine a man doing what you're doing? He would be completely bewildered. He wouldn't have a clue what's going on, right? Yeah. And the ladies would be all, you know, scheming and scamming and, you know, oh, I don't feel good today, Prabhu. Can you tell me about Krishna? A guy would be just, ooh. You all know yourselves, it would be very difficult, eh? Yes? So these ladies who are managing ladies are doing a great service. They're not only protecting the ladies, they're protecting the men, too. Soon as fire is around the butter, something happens. That's just the way it is. That's nature. You don't have to wonder about it. Isn't it so? You have a room full of single ladies. As soon as an eligible man walks in the room, everything changes, right? Yeah, you all know that, right? Right? He's not even unconscious, right? Everyone starts preening. You know what preening means? You know? Yeah, just put on a certain air. It's just, it's instant. You don't even have to think about it. Just. It's just material nature. You know, that's just the way material nature works. You know? And what happens? You have a room full of men and an eligible young lady walks through. Immediately. The first thing a man will do is something that shows he's competent and expert. The first thing he'll do when an eligible lady walks by, he'll show that he's accomplished something, he's good at something. Just see my yoga asana. Just see my ability to solve the computer problems. Immediately men become very expert when ladies walk by. Ladies become very alluring when an eligible man walks by, and men become very expert and productive when an eligible lady walks by. They start doing so many things, you know, achieving so much. So it gets complicated, all this stuff going on, you know. It's better just to keep everybody in their separate corners, at least for a while, you know. You can kind of see what's going on clearly. You can see yourself clearly. Isn't this how you all know? When there's a bunch of guys and an eligible young lady walks through, immediately the whole room changes. The men just start changing their behavior completely. They may start laughing with each other and putting down another guy, you know, just to show that they're great, all sorts of things like that. I guess before you were married, when you were playing in a band, if there was an eligible lady, all of a sudden you... No? You were beyond all that. Don't the guys in the band, you know, they always get all the girls? Oh, the singers. But there's always, but now all the girls can get the singers, so some of them go for the bass player, right? Right? Oh, you were just a pious guy. So we try to keep these things minimized, you know, at least for some years. So you can get a hold of yourself and try to proceed with your life in a sober, sane way. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Is that where he's finally key?